kitchen?
No, no, I don't know. That piece is fine. Sarah, I love you.
Everybody, we all work together.
I don't mind at all. Whatever you want. You can sit right next to me also if you want.
Do you feel like you need any air conditioning in here?
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Locked away for people to see.
Oh, the device is full. I can't even record.
Sure. Okay, I'll send you the recording.
Oh, you would?
Give me your email.
I will. Oh, it'll be my greatest pleasure. Thank you so much. This will be posted on your website also?
Not really. I don't have a website. The website exists, but it doesn't go on there.
I listen to a lot of Shira.
Not here. But it's all old. There's nothing new. The person who took care of it can't do it anymore, so
maybe I can find somebody for you.
If you can, I would.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Okay. Okay.
Baruch.
Not only that, it looks like there's more people here now. Appearances are also important. Okay. We were discussing last week our relationship with Goyim. And we said that a Jew has to be cordial with Goyim, to treat them properly, not allowed to cheat a Goy. Not allowed to steal from a Goy, and Goyim are, if they keep their seven mitzvahs, get a share in the world to come. And then we asked last week that if that's the case, why do we discriminate in certain cases, do things to Goyim that we wouldn't do to a Jew? For instance, we take interest from a Goy. You're not allowed to take interest from a Jew on a loan. We return lost articles to Jews, but you're not required to return a lost article to a non-Jew. And we explain that it's not that we're hurting the Goy. We're treating the Goy in what is fair and normal. Taking interest is the way the world exists. And returning lost articles is not necessarily something that is logical, because what's logical is finders, keepers, losers, weepers. Right? You lose something, you lost it, finished. Except for the Jew, you have to go that extra mile. He's your relative. What's okay to do to a stranger is not necessarily okay to do to your mother. We gave an example last week. Right? If you give a stranger $100 towards his rent, right, and wish him well, you're a very good person. If you give your mother $100 towards her rent and wish her well, you're a really bad person. So what's expected for a close relative is not expected for a distant relative. Goyim are distant relatives. Jews are a close relative. You have to go that extra mile. What we didn't discuss last week is one halacha that seems to be very, discriminatory. You have a Jew who is having a heart attack, Rachmana Litzlan, and you have to rush him to the hospital. So you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. You're allowed to get in your car. You're allowed to call an ambulance. You're allowed to do anything that's necessary to save his life on Shabbos and desecrate the Shabbos. A non-Jew, according to the strict halacha, if what you're going to do is only a rabbinic prohibition, you're allowed to do it. But a Torah prohibition, you wouldn't be allowed. Driving a car on Shabbos is a Torah prohibition because of the combustion engine, it's making fire, and you wouldn't be allowed to drive that Goy to a hospital to save his life on Shabbos. Now that's hard to explain that, well, to your mother you would, what's it called, save her. But a stranger not, or even strangers, you would save their life. Okay, it does answer the following. We'll get to the Shabbos in a second. But a normal case of saving a life. You are required to take a risk to save a Jewish life. You're not required to take a risk to save a non-Jewish life. Okay. Now let's explain what that means. Even a Jewish life, if the risk is great, you're not allowed to take the risk because you're basically committing suicide. If running into a burning building, the chances of you coming out are very slim. And if you don't run in, the people in there are trapped, and they definitely will die. But the chances of you saving them are slim, and the chances that you'll also die with them, according to some, you're not even allowed to go in. According to others, you're surely not required to go in, but if you want to take the risk, you're allowed to. If there's a chance, at least, that you'd be able to save them. Same thing jumping in and saving somebody drowning. If there's a strong current, and that more probable you're going to die too, then it could be you're not even allowed to take the risk. But if it's a small risk for you, and a big risk for the other person, then you have to take a small risk to save a Jewish life. You don't have to do that to save a non-Jewish life. There also we can understand it. Why? Imagine somebody's screaming, you know, help me, save me, there's a fire, or whatever. And a lot of people are standing around, and one person runs in and risks his life to save that person. The next day in the newspaper, what do they report? The hero that ran in, or do they speak badly about all the other people who stood around the sidewalk? Obviously, they speak about the hero who ran in, because it's understood that not everybody's a hero. And not everybody can go and risk their life to save somebody else. So what's normal is not to be a hero. For your mother, right, there they would report that the son didn't run in to try to save his mother. But for a regular person, could be, it's not, that fits what we said last week. But not to desecrate the Shabbos, to save a goyish life, seems to imply that non-Jewish lives aren't all that important, and Jewish lives are important, which is not such a good thing to publicize. So it's another way of understanding it. I admit it is not necessarily the halachic way of understanding it, but it is true enough that at least to present so it doesn't cause a chilul Hashem. That this is a way of explaining it that even a non-Jew could understand. It's not based on the premise that non-Jewish life is less important than Jewish life. Because there are certain situations where you're not allowed to save a Jewish life either. Where the halacha is more important than the life. Right? Give me an example. Forget about Torah. Okay? Let's take an example where you could see that saving somebody's life may not be what you should do. You have a person who is rigged up to an atomic bomb, and he's drowning. Okay, but if you take him out of the water, the bomb is going to go off and decimate an entire city. If you don't take him out of the water, he's going to drown, but the bomb will not be detonated. In that situation, what do you think you should do? I mean, it's a terrible situation, right? But it would seem logical not to save that person's life, because saving his life is going to kill thousands of people. So it's a rachmanis that he should die, but you don't want thousands of people to die instead. So in that situation, saving his life is killing thousands of people. Not saving his life is he's going to die, but not the thousands of people. Shabbos, if we would understand how devastating Chilul Shabbos is, we don't see it. We see just it's a halah, and if you don't do it, but a person who's mechalel Shabbos is liable to a death penalty. It's a serious thing. Not more than that, though. Chilul Shabbos causes terrible repercussions in the world. It's like polluting the world. It's like creating a radioactivity that harms people, physically, spiritually, whatever. So really, Shabbos is more important than a life, even a Jewish life. And really, you shouldn't desecrate. There were opinions, we don't hold like that, that in a case where it's your life or Shabbos, you keep Shabbos. There are certain situations like that. Serving idolatry or giving up your life, you have to give up your life. Murdering somebody else to save your life, you give up your life. So there are prohibitions that are more important than human life. Shabbos is more important than saving a life. Because when it comes to desecrating the Shabbos, you are endangering thousands of people by creating that pollution of what's it called, of Shabbos desecration. So then why do you save a Jewish life? Because the Gemara says, desecrate one Shabbos for him, that he should be able to keep other Shabboses. So since this desecration is anyway forced, not willing, right, and you're going to cause this person to be able to keep other Shabbosos, so that overrides the danger that's caused by a Shabbos desecration. By a goy, that doesn't apply. The goy is not going to keep any other Shabbosos. He doesn't have the idea of keeping Shabbos. So you're causing a negative and not creating anything positive. So, Memela, the Shabbos, takes precedence over life. If it would be that the Jew, according to this opinion, if the Jew wouldn't be able to keep any more Shabbosos, he wouldn't save a Jewish life either. It's not really the halacha, but at least it explains it to a certain degree. Okay, any questions on that? I want to go to one other point about Goyim and Jews. Yeah.
All halachas, because there's so many halachas that we really don't know until we really learn them. Are they all the same?
What do you mean all the same?
Like, boy, you're separating something on Shabbos.
Yeah, if you do it, if it's a Torah prohibition, and you do it, what's it called, knowingly. You know what you're doing. And there are two witnesses who warn you and tell you this is borer, and there's no question about it. And if you do it, you'll get the death penalty. And you say, I know and I don't care, then you can get the death penalty. If any of those conditions are not there, you don't get a death penalty. But if you do it on purpose, and it's really a Torah prohibition, even if there are no witnesses and there is no warning, you have a spiritual death penalty. Kores. It's like eating chametz on Pesach or eating on Yom Kippur. Your neshama is cut off to a certain degree from the spiritual world.
Squeezing lemon and taking the seed out?
Could be that's not a Torah prohibition. It's not easy to have that it's mamash a Torah prohibition. Many of the things are rabbinic, and a rabbinic thing, you're not liable to any kind of death penalty. Serious, but it's not not as serious as transgressing a Torah prohibition. Okay, one more thing. When we speak about Goyim, we have a chazal that says, Halacha l'Moshe Misinai. It is a halacha from Sinai. Esav Soni is Yaakov. That Esav hates Yaakov. And Esav is only a euphemism. Goyim hate Jews. Now that, on the surface, seems a little difficult.
What's the source for that?
The source is, there's a Gemara that says it, and there are many Midrashim that say it. So the question is, what does it mean? And why is it halacha l'moshe misinai? It doesn't seem to be halacha, it seems to be a fact of nature. This makes it into a halacha. The way I understand it is the following. You have to understand what Sina is and what Ahava is. Okay. The Rambam says clearly that there is no mitzvah to love your parents. There's a mitzvah to honor them, to respect them. There's no mitzvah to love them. There's no mitzvah to love your spouse. Rabbinically, the rabbis said a husband has to love his wife. But it's not a Torah halacha, it's a rabbinic. And it's mashmah from the Rambam, there's no halacha that a woman has to love her husband. Just that the husband has to love his wife. And if the husband loves his wife, probably she'll reciprocate. And there's no mitzvah to love a Navi or a Talmud Chacham. You have to respect them, you have to listen to them. You don't have to love them.
You have to love a ger.
Yet the Rambam says you have to love a ger. He says, you see how important the ger is, because it's possible to respect and honor people and not love them, and the Torah made it a chiyuv to love a ger. Okay. So you have to understand, why is there no mitzvah to love all these people? So you have to understand what love is and what hatred is. It's not what we call love and hatred. Love, Ahava, in Gematria is Echad, 1, 13. 13 is the same Gematria as Echad. Ahava means I feel an affinity towards something, a commonality. I have something in common with that thing, and that is the bond that is called Ahava. When you have a connection to something and you feel bonded to it, so it leads to emotions that we call love. But it starts with a commonality. Because if you don't feel a connection to something, you can't have that feeling of love. You may have a feeling of lust, but not love. Love is a feeling of affinity, commonality. That's the basis. After that, it becomes emotional. Okay. Hatred, therefore, is the opposite. Hatred is feeling a separation from something. For instance, the Gemara says if you haven't spoken to somebody for 3 days because you have complaints against them, you're considered an enemy of the person. Obviously, you don't hate his guts, but there's a separation. Sina means that where there could be a connection and a commonality and an affinity, there's something is separate. That is the foundation of Sina. It doesn't mean to hate somebody. It means to be separate from that person. To feel aloof from that person. I'll prove it to you. The Torah says that, what's it called? Vayehav es Rachel Mileah. Yaakov Avinu loved Rachel more than Leah. What does that imply? That he loved Leah. He just loved Rachel more. Next pasuk says, Vayar Hashem kisnua Leah. God saw that Leah was hated. When she was hated. It says he loved her, just he loved Rachel more. The answer is, hatred doesn't mean that Yaakov hated Leah. Chas v'shalom. He couldn't have children with her if he hated her. Wouldn't be allowed. Right? It means the following. If Yaakov had the capacity of feeling that close to Rachel, and a little bit was missing in his closeness to Leah, then that little bit is called Sina. That's Pirut. That's separation. Sina starts with a separation. That is the foundation. Because you feel separate from something, your emotions can then lead you to actually hate. But Sina is not the hatred. Sina is the roots of separation. Ava is not the feeling of love. It's the feeling of a commonality. Therefore, if that's the case, I want to say the Torah could not command you to create a commonality where it doesn't exist by nature. The Torah can command us to recognize a commonality that exists and to foster it. What?
Like foster it.
Right, exactly. I'm looking for a better word than foster to enhance it. That's the word. To enhance it. Okay? So where is there a natural connection between us and God? That we're created in God's image. So it's a mitzvah to love God. Torah says recognize the commonality and enhance it. There is a natural connection between one Jew and another. What is that? We have the same Torah and mitzvahs. That's what you have to love about another Jew. I don't have to love you for who you are. You may really rub me the wrong way, and I really don't like your personality. But I have to love you and recognize the fact that we have something in common. We have the same Torah and mitzvahs. So that makes us have a commonality. So I can not want to be too friendly with you because your personality rubs me the wrong way, but I have to feel that commonality because we're all Jews. And a ger, even more. He chose to have the same mitzvahs that I have. So I have to recognize that and I have to love a ger. However, a spouse could be we have nothing in common. People get married, right? They must have something in common. No, Maybe the wife had $1 million in her bank account, so that's why not. We had nothing in common, except I wanted to have in common the bank account. Or, right, the woman's father bought a shotgun, and that was the kind of wedding it was, right? I have nothing in common except that the father-in-law decided that I'm marrying his daughter.
That's what they call a shotgun marriage?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's really.
Oh, I didn't know.
Now you know. See, you learned something here. That's a shotgun marriage. It's the old proverbial farmer, hillbilly. Okay. In any case, so therefore the Torah couldn't command you to love your spouse. Because maybe you have nothing in common. There's no essential commonality. It's obviously better you marry somebody you have something in common with. And that you develop a love. But to command you, because it's not something that is what's it called, essential, therefore, what's it called, the Torah didn't command. The same thing goes with parents. It's a little difficult. Because the Torah, parents and children do have something in common, right? They come, but it's not true. First of all, you could be a throwback from a recessive gene and have nothing genetically, or very little genetically connected to your parents. Okay, what's it called? At least loosely. Okay, you have red hair. You surely don't have any. Don't have to essentially have a connection with your parents, with philosophy, religion. What's it called? The politics.
Midos,
right? Exactly. Could be that you're completely different than your parents. There are people like that. So there's no essential commonality between a child and a parent. In all these situations, unless the person's a ger, there is another commonality. They're Jews. So basically, you have to love your spouse because they're Jewish. But I don't know, my wife would be very happy if I would say, you know, I love you just like I love the guy next door. That would not be what's it called, because he's also a Jew. But to love her as a spouse, there's no specific mitzvah. Same thing with parents. And the same thing with a Navi. I mean, I have nothing in common with him, but I have to listen to him. I have to respect him, but I don't have to love him. Because love means recognizing an essential commonality and building on it. Now, hatred, therefore, is having a separation. And if you enhance it or whatever, then you can it can come to what we call hatred. So that is Sina. Now, when it says Halach Lamosh Misena Ace of Soni is Yaakov, it doesn't mean that all Goyim hate Jews. It means that from Sinai, God put into the world a safety that Jews and Goyim shouldn't mix. Because we have a different mission than they have. They have to be moral, they have 7 mitzvahs. We have to be holy. And therefore, we have to create our own society. That's why we're given Eretz Yisrael, that we can be not isolated from the non-Jew, because we're supposed to be a light to the nations of the world, but insulated. We're supposed to live insulated from the rest of the world, because if we don't, we will be influenced by their way of life, and it could be a very nice way of life for them. But it's not the kind of life that Rav Amram wants for us. He wants us to be holy. He wants them to be moral. So therefore, we have to insulate ourselves. We're supposed to live in Eretz Yisrael, not isolated from the world, but insulated that we can create our own society with our own values and standards. And that's what it means. V'avdil eschem min ha'amim. I separated you from the nations of the world. We're an am levadad yishkon. We're a nation that dwells apart. Again, not isolated. The modern Hebrew word for insulation is bidud. That's badad, insulated. And if we would break down that separation, then we'd all reach the lowest common denominator. So we're not supposed to separate ourselves from the bad goyim. That's obvious. But even from the good goyim, because it's a different lifestyle. Their lifestyle is what's expected of them is different from what's expected of us. And therefore, the Rabban Shalom put into the world a sina, a certain separation between, no matter how much the goy may like a Jew, but he doesn't feel that we're part of them, we're something else. And that's very good. As long as we separate from the non-Jew, the Gemara says that Jews are compared to oil and goyim are compared to water. It's impossible to mix oil and water. You can try to do it, and it remains mixed in temporarily, but eventually the oil rises to the surface. And that is, Jews, as long as they are insulated from the non-Jewish world, not isolated, but insulated, so we can be like the oil that floats on the water very nicely. The water supports the oil, and the oil protects the water. But once you try to mix the oil into the water, eventually the water pressure pushes the oil out. Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner says it very poignantly. He says, we have a choice. Either we make Kiddush, or the goy will make Havdalah. Either we sanctify ourselves, or when we try to assimilate into the non-Jewish world, what inevitably happens is the non-Jewish world pushes us out. It happened in Mitzrayim, it happened in Spain, it happened in Germany. Whenever we try to assimilate, the goy says no. That's the safety measure. That's the sina. As long as we coexist with the nations of the world and keep our distance in insulation, then everything is fine. And that sina only represents the root of separation. When we don't separate, then the sina can grow into mamash hatred and anti-Semitism. So that's what it means. It's a halacha. God instituted in order that we should be able to fulfill our purpose and remain insulated from the nations of the world. There's a sina, again, not a hatred. There's a separation between Jews and non-Jews. It's a natural separation. If we respect that and deal with it in a proper way, then it can be very, very productive. If we don't accept it, then that separation leads to hatred. And then we know what happens, what's it called, when the nations of the world hate us. So that is one way of understanding, I think, the idea of Esav Sone Es Yaakov. Okay, pretty much that finishes this Mishnah. So we finished the second Mishnah in the third chapter of Pirkei Avos. And next week, in Mitzvah Hashem, we will start the third Mishnah, probably, and maybe start it at least, and speak a little bit about Shavuos, since the next week is Shavuos, it won't be a Shir, because Yom Tov Sheni, for some people here, I think. I don't know, anybody here not an Israeli?
No, what is Yom Tov Sheni?
The second day of Yom Tov for people who come from Chutz Laretz. Monday, Sunday and Mondays. I guess everybody here's from Israel, yeah?
So, will we have a Shia?
Yeah, if everybody's here, we'll have a Shia, probably.
Is it always up here?
No, this is...
They didn't know where you were.
I told the secretary to...
Okay. The same time?
It's going to be the same time for now, and we'll see about...
Today, you'll have it... A shear for sure, and then the following week you're saying the
shabu is. Yeah, but probably have the shear also. What am I saying? What's it called? The time change, we'll see. Because today I took a different route and I got here on time. So the truth is, if I had trusted the ways, I would have taken that route in the past. But I couldn't imagine why is Waze taking me so much out of the way. And I always met my way and I never got here on time. And this time I said, you know what, I'm going to try it. And it's a little roundabout, but it's much faster.
Waze is too fast.
Usually right.
Yeah, usually.
Thank you so much.